ya lo hace, pierna derecha, directo al arco, ¡golazo! ¡Golazo!
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Wednesday, February 6, 2019. I'm Kevin Larame with Dwayne Mullins. As always, today on the show we're going to talk about the USL and the Ottawa Fury. A little summary of all the things that happened since last summer with a great article by Mickey Turner that's available at socceresq.com. Welcome, Mickey, to the show.
Kevin, Dwayne, thanks for having me on, and look forward to talking about it.
Mickey, I guess we'll start with this. You mentioned in the article that it would have been unprecedented to sort of challenge this at the CAS. I'm wondering if from a lawyer, if you could put your lawyer hat on for a minute, whether you're a little disappointed that it didn't go there to see exactly what the legal ruling would have been, or not the legal ruling, but the CAS ruling would have been.
Yeah. It was definitely a little bit disappointing, just, you know, from a lawyer / journalist perspective, because we don't have any answers to some of the questions that the article raised. It's been quite a bit of time digging through CAS trying to figure out exactly what they would have ruled and what precedent they would have used to make the ruling, and additionally trying to figure out exactly how CONCACAF came to their decision, because there is precious little information about how CONCACAF would have come to such a decision and kind of the precedent behind the FIFA statute in the first place, because it's a paragraph of exposition, I guess, for lack of a better word, in the FIFA statute, and it doesn't really shed any light on these issues. I mean, obviously, this stuff doesn't come off very, very frequently, because typically, if you have a domestic league, you're playing in it, with a couple of well-known exceptions, such as Monaco and Cardiff and Swansea and things like that. But beyond that, there's just not a lot of information on these types of cases.
The term is exceptional circumstances that can be used to waive the domestic rule, so and so. But with, like everything with FIFA, it's a little slippery. Do you think that terminology, that wording is purposely vague so that they can have some leeway in terms of how they sanction these things?
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense. And in this particular case, it would appear to have bit them in the backside for having it so vague. It does allow them to have a lot of leeway, as you say, in making rulings. But again, this stuff doesn't come up very often because any team is playing in their domestic league typically. And the ones that aren't are because of longstanding issues or reasons. And, you know, Ottawa just doesn't fall neatly into any of the exceptions as outlined in the piece. And so it would have definitely allowed CAS to, you know, kind of craft an interesting ruling probably. Unfortunately, we didn't get that far because CONCACAF backed down after Ottawa, went public.
Mickey, this exception or those rules and this situation are kind of, like you mentioned, not necessarily something that we see often. The turn of the century in the 1900s, we saw that situation in England with, like what you mentioned, with Cardiff and the teams from Wales like Swansea. And we have the situation now with Ottawa. You mentioned Monaco too. Those are famous examples. When it comes to Ottawa, which ruling, which law that you found in your research that used to be applied for England and for the France and Monaco situation, which law did really help Ottawa be able to win it out of court before it even got there?
See, that's the thing. There is no clear ruling that applies to Ottawa's situation. Obviously, previously to 2019, it was pretty clear. It was the lack of a domestic league in Canada that allowed Ottawa and, you know, I guess also Toronto and Montreal and Vancouver to play in the United States, because there wasn't an equivalent league or even anything close for that matter in Canada. And obviously with the CPL coming online this year, that domestic exception no longer applies. And so Ottawa's position basically was that they are in an established league, they're an established team, and forcing them to come from that to the CPL, where there is no history of a longstanding first division team, forcing them to come in there in 2019 with, you know, things look good for the CPL, but obviously it's untested at this point. So Ottawa's position is, hey, you're going to force us to come in here, and we have no idea how the league's going to do if it, you know, if it fails after a year and we're left without a league. We have to go back to USL and try to get back in. Who knows if they'll accept us? Who knows what kind of entrance fee they'll charge us? Who knows if they'll even want us back? And so Ottawa's position was, you're going to force us to do all this with no prospects or no, you know, no guarantees of survival. And that was essentially the case they made, they were going to make to CONCACAF and FIFA before things kind of went sideways at the beginning of December.
Now, for 2019, this issue is resolved, but 2020 is coming really quickly. It's already not even 10 months away. How do we imagine this situation going forward? Will a 2020 exemption still be given by CONCACAF/FIFA? Will Ottawa willingly try to go into the CPL? When you look at jurisprudence from other cases that you have looked upon, how does it look for Ottawa in 2020?
Yeah, so a couple of great questions there. There's a couple of ways it could go. Obviously, it's possible Ottawa sees the CPL going well and says, okay, I think we're ready to move over in 2020. And then there's, you know, this is all kind of moot. It's also possible that the CPL, you know, kind of, you know, steadily progresses, but not quite where Ottawa wants it to be. And Ottawa says, can you give us a couple of years to, you know, make sure that the CPL is stabilized? And then that allows us a more easy transition. And it's possible that CONCACAF and the CSA and everyone agrees to give them a, you know, maybe a 2-year pathway to get into the CPL. It's also possible that CONCACAF, as they said at the beginning of December, says there's no reason for you to remain in the U.S., in the USL, and you need to move over to the CPL, or you need to move over to a Canadian league, but you can't play in the USL anymore. And if that happens, Ottawa has a couple of options. They can either agree, they can either go back to the Court of Arbitration for Sport, or they can decide to hang it up and not play anywhere and just, you know, close the doors.
All right, I'm going to ask you to take the lawyer hat off and put the journalist hat on for the next couple of questions. There's been a lot of speculation by people here that Victor Mantegliani, who was instrumental in the start of the Canadian Premier League project, a lot of people call it his legacy project. In fact, there's a lot of speculation that he might have been maybe the one pushing this agenda to send a message about the viability of the Canadian Premier League. From the people you talk to, do you feel there's any possibility that this is Victor, the president of CONCACAF, perhaps trying to manipulate things?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I think that's very fair to say. The sources I talked to described it as a power play, quote-unquote, by Victor to try to get Ottawa into the CPL for what you say is legacy reasons and to establish a league with an anchor team that has, you know, has some history and is established in their market. And that is definitely the feeling I got from the people that I talked to, both around Ottawa and the USL. Again, fortunately for everyone this time around, that was not something that was, CONCACAF ended up backing down. So we didn't have a huge fight. But it's fair to say that that's how they feel. And it definitely would have caused a major problem for obviously Ottawa and the USL as well, who would have had to have scrambled to modify their schedules, and which would have probably cost them some money, as I noted in the piece. Because they've already released the schedule and have already established, you know, a contract, leasing, stadium agreements, et cetera, all that kind of stuff, which with the loss of Ottawa, it would have definitely cost them some money. And so they were certainly concerned about that as well.
The other speculation that's out there that is that CONCACAF never really intended to take this all the way, but this was rather a warning shot of sorts to try and force Ottawa back to the table to negotiate their way into the Canadian Premier League, to get the two sides back at the same table to figure out a solution that works for both of them. Do you think there's any viability to that?
Yeah, I think that's also a good shout. The interesting thing there is obviously Ottawa back in July of 2018 had announced that they were obviously going to play in USL for 2019. And as far as I can tell, didn't express much interest in dealing with 2020 and beyond. And so CONCACAF putting out that letter basically denying them sanctioning for 2019 was definitely a way to get their attention. Obviously, Ottawa at that point didn't really go back to the table, but went to the Court of Arbitration for Sport once it became clear to them that CONCACAF, in their opinion, was being strident and wasn't really willing to discuss things the way they wanted them discussed. So CONCACAF had a warning shot, I think it's fair to say, and then Ottawa responded in kind, and ultimately CONCACAF backed off. But, of course, sanctioning is only good for 2019 season, and Ottawa needs to come back and apply every year. Even though they didn't necessarily do that all the time in the past, sometimes those applications rolled over. But going forward, it's pretty clear that Ottawa is going to have to apply every year. And there we get back into the exceptional circumstances and whether there's an actual exception to playing in the domestic league. The stronger the CPL is, the less exceptional the circumstance, I suppose, is going forward. And then the last thing, obviously, is per Ottawa's agreement with the USL, they have to give 6 months' notice before they leave for the CPL. And they are allowed to leave for the CPL with that notice without any fee or penalty. But again, that obviously gets us to, say, June or July, and they've got a decision to make if they're going to try to stay in the USL for 2020 or whether they're going to try to get into the CPL for next year.
We've talked about the Canadian Soccer Association's role. We've talked about CONCACAF, FIFA's role, and the Court of Arbitration of Sport's role. What I'm wondering, Mickey, as well, is what was USSF's role in all of this? And is the United States Soccer Federation a bit stuck between a rock and a hard place where they would like the Fury in their league because it's an established brand, an established team in the city with a somewhat history of soccer over the last 5 years? Or are they really staying out of this and just will take whatever decision is made by other governing bodies and accept the resolutions of those?
Yeah, interesting question. I think U.S. Soccer was certainly happy to have Ottawa in the USL. I didn't sense, based on the people I talked to, that U.S. Soccer was ever going to do anything but accept the application, just based on their working relationship with the USL and with the CSA. And so they were obviously prepared to accept the application, and they did, obviously, in fact. Going forward, it's going to be a different question because we don't know what U.S. Soccer will think about all of this going forward, especially with the MLS teams that are in Canada. Who knows what Montagliaghi and CONCACAF think about that. I had some reporting in the story that there is multiple sources have said that U.S. Soccer or that MLS has some type of exemption which allows them to not have to apply every year through CONCACAF to get sanctioning for Montreal, Vancouver, and Toronto. I don't know how long that's for, and so I did put that out there. I've had some rumors reported on this timeline, how much time those teams have, but I can't confirm that, so I'm not going to say specifically, but it's a fairly significant amount of time, but it's not forever. And so at some point, that reckoning is going to have to be had unless CONCACAF is agreeable to keep those teams playing in the United States or playing in the United States League indefinitely. So it's a definite issue that U.S. Soccer and MLS will have to reckon with in the future, but for the time being, they appear to be fine.
And the other question I have for you as well, Mickey, is you kind of touched on it in a second ago, but Because of those three MLS teams in Canada and the famous grandfather-in situation, the grandfather rule, where because there was no quote-unquote first Premier League or a first division in Canada when the three MLS teams joined Major League Soccer, Vancouver, Montreal, Toronto, is there a possibility that those three teams could always be welcomed in Major League Soccer? Or is there a possibility that 15, 20, 25 years down the road, or even less, those three teams with the same FIFA ruling would be kind of forced to join the Canadian Premier League? Is there exceptions, or is there maybe jurisprudence again in that type of situation for the three MLS teams in Canada?
So the interesting thing about MLS, obviously, is that it's a single entity. So those teams aren't their own separate, you know, organizations per se. They're all owned by MLS LLC. And basically those three teams, like the teams in the United States, like New York City, like Seattle, like Houston, are basically outposts of MLS LLC. And so it's not, if in fact at some point FIFA or CONCACAF were to say, nope, we're no longer sanctioning those teams playing there, it's not like Toronto FC is suddenly going to join the Canadian Premier League and that the ownership will just transfer over to that league. Those intellectual properties and marks are owned by MLS. So it's not those teams that will be joining. What is more likely to happen is that those owners will either move to a city in the United States and leave the Toronto and Montreal and Vancouver markets open for some local ownership group to come take over and play in the CPL. Or perhaps those local ownership groups would have to pay some type of licensing or fee to MLS to use those names, which seems extremely unlikely. Or those ownership groups basically sell their interest back to MLS and get paid out. And then again, some new teams come into those markets, but it's not going to be those teams that are playing in the CPL. More likely is that those teams would just vacate those cities. And then the final thing on that is that probably brings up some issues regarding antitrust and things like that, which I'm not going to get into here, regarding forcing teams to vacate particular cities. So it's not as simple as it is maybe in the Ottawa situation with CPL just simply or with CONCACAF simply just saying you can't play in those domestic leagues anymore. MLS's single entity structure is probably going to have something to say about any ruling like that.
Well, to continue on that way, the question I had to do with the structure of MLS, the franchiseness of it, so to speak. Do you think that if there was ever a time down the line, we're speculating here, I appreciate, but if there's ever a time down the line that this was challenged, that MLS might simply argue that these aren't Canadian clubs, that these are just expressions of their own business structure themselves or franchises, and therefore they're exempt from this?
Yeah, I think that is absolutely an argument that that would be made based on the single entity structure. And it's an interesting argument. It's a novel argument, I think. And, you know, MLS has had success arguing that their single entity structure protects them from you know, legal challenges and findings like that. Most famously in the Fraser v. MLS case, where they found that a single entity structure can't conspire with itself. And that's the players were looking to get free agency and some other rights. And so I could see something similar along those lines where MLS basically says these aren't Canadian teams per se. They're just teams that are located in those particular markets, but they are owned by MLS entirely and just happen to be playing in these foreign places. So yeah, I haven't done a whole lot of research on that, obviously, but it's a novel argument that could be made. But again, we don't know how long this exemption MLS apparently has is for. It could be 50 or 60 years, in which case, you know, we'll long be gone by this by the time it comes up.
Fair enough. The final question for me, look, there's been some talk that you forget about the Fury and USL and kind of sanction issues there. There's been some suggestion by some that perhaps the movement forward, not just in North America, but around the world, but in particular in the North America case with the 2026 World Cup happening, is towards some kind of super league, which would be in Mexico, the United States, and Canada, to sort of grow that for the clubs that have the ambition to be in such a thing. Do you think that ultimately that this all might become moot one day and that the borders might not matter anymore?
Oh, that's such a great question. And I do remember those reports coming out that MLS was having some discussions with Liga MX about some type of North American soccer league, for lack of a better name of a league. And so that is certainly something MLS is certainly, hoping for more relevance in the United States and even in Mexico for that matter. There's certainly something that, raises an eyebrow when you talk about it. And bringing Canada in there too, if the EPL gets up and running well. There's certainly something that raises an eyebrow about having, I don't know, that'd be like 40 or 50 teams, just kind of mashed together in one big super league. And then, you start getting into talk about promotion regulation, relegation and all that fun stuff. So that is certainly something I think that they would be interested in looking at. And, around the 2026 World Cup is an interesting time to consider something like that with, the U.S., Mexico, and Canada all hosting games. So, it's a fun bit of speculation. I obviously haven't heard anything about that, but it's definitely interesting to think about.
Last question before we let you go, Mickey, and we really appreciate your time. And by the way, you can follow Mickey on Twitter at TurnerESQ. Mickey, here it is. You have a law degree, and you're a soccer fan, and over the last year, your law degree has been really, really useful to follow the world of soccer in North America. With all the lawsuits going on right now, we had this one with USL and the Court of Arbitration of Sport and the Ottawa Fury and the CSA. There's a Miami situation with David Beckham and other places, other parts of land that they want to acquire or can't acquire, and there's infighting there. There's a Sky Blue situation, and there's other lawsuits too. Which one does intrigue you the most outside of the Ottawa Fury situation?
Oh, that is a great question. I think right now, because the Sky Blue isn't in a lawsuit phase right now, I'll exclude them for the time being. I think probably the Chicago Fire situation is the most intriguing at the moment. In that case, a local supporter has sued members of their front office, as well as the city that the Fire play in, for civil rights violations and just being treated poorly and being banned from games. And I think the interesting thing there is that it's kind of a microcosm of the Fire's problems overall on and off the field. Obviously, they haven't had much relevance in their market. Their attendance is terrible. The location of the stadium's not good. They have a bad lease. And so it's just kind of, and they're fighting with their supporters as well. And so it's just kind of a microcosm of what has been a problem market for MLS. For probably about 10 years now. And so I'm interested to see, number one, if the lawsuit is able to be resolved. Number two, if they're able to turn things around with their fan group, the supporters groups, and whether they're able to do some things with on the field to kind of bring some hope back to the market. And then there's also the thing with their academy player, Andrew Gutman, who spurned an offer from them to sign with Celtic. And they tried to get loaned to Nashville, and there's some reporting that the Fire had something to do with that not happening, and MLS as well. So just the whole Chicago thing, the Chicago experience, is definitely the one I'd say people should look out for, because it's probably going to get a bit worse before it gets better. And they still, even if they get their on-field and player personnel issues sorted out, they still have the issue with the lease with Bridgeview, which lasts for another 20 years, and it's a lease that is hamstringing them and their ability to be relevant in the market. So that's probably the one I would have people look out for the most if you're just kind of interested in general things going on.
Yeah, the situation in Chicago is fascinating, and you mentioned the lease of the Toyota Stadium. It's really unfortunate, too, because it binds them to a place where they don't want to be at, where a place where the fans don't want to go, and to a place that is not even recognized as Chicago. So there's a lot of problems with that space, and in 20 years, I feel we're going to have another lawsuit coming soon for them to trying to get out of that lease. So we'll for sure have you on again to talk about those great lawsuits.
Oh, I think it'll be before then.
Oh, yeah. No, that's going to be soon. And it's a shame, too, because Chicago is an amazing city, one of the best sports city, not by results, but by teams. We're looking at great historical teams from the Chicago Cubs to the Bulls and the Chicago Sting back in the old NASL, and hopefully the fire turned things around eventually. Mickey Turner of Soccer ESQ, thank you so much for your time today, and where can the listener find your work and follow you on social media?
Yes, you can find me on Twitter at Turner ESQ, and you already plugged the website, and I'm also contributing at The Athletic, writing stories for them, and I'll be at the annual general meetings of U.S. Soccer in Phoenix / Scottsdale next week. So hopefully I'll have some interesting stories to report out of there.
Thank you very much, and we'll be right back after this short break.
You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at Soccer Today SPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/ Sports Podcasting Network. You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.
And we're back on Soccer Today. Thanks again to Mickey Turner. That was fascinating, Dwayne. You know, there's going to be a lot of lawsuits in the next few years, and there has been a lot over the last year. And it's kind of, we've said this before when we had Professor Bank on the show, too. We don't have time to go to law school and to get a law degree to be able to correctly discuss those situations. But you know what we can do? We can get a lawyer on the line, and he can explain to us why lawsuits are so prevalent in soccer.
Yeah, 2 degrees are enough for me, Kevin. But look, all those European podcasts, they may have the glory, they may have the more sexy sort of topics, but it's more fun to cover North American soccer. We get to talk about lawsuits and owners stealing turf and just crazy stuff. It's a lot of fun.
Rayo Vallecano, if people don't know what Dwayne alluded to right there, about 2 years ago, an owner of a soccer team stole a pallet of 100 yard of turf. So that the team could play.
Took half the field.
That's like no.
It's like when you draw the you're pissed off at your roommate and you draw the duct tape down the middle.
Or if you're playing soccer with your ball and the game's not going your way, taking your ball and going back home with it. It's literally that situation, and that was fascinating. But no. North American sports is fascinating, and no one takes no for an answer, and everyone's trying to find an edge, and often lawyers are used for that, but it is fascinating, too. And we'll see what the future holds for the Ottawa Fury. We'll know this summer, 6 months before the end of the season. They have to communicate their decision with the USL, and then we'll see the ramifications of it. But it's a fascinating situation that, for now, the most important scenario is that the Fury are still playing soccer in 2019. Doesn't matter where. For soccer fans in Ottawa and the Ottawa region, they have a team to go see this year. And we'll hope for the best for the future.
Yeah, look, what's the old adage that the truth usually lies somewhere in the middle of two? Yeah, I think when it comes to the Fury situation that we hear stories about Julian de Guzman storming away from the table and refusing to work with the Canadian Premier League. We hear stories about the Canadian Premier League being inflexible about their willingness to allow Ottawa to bring contracts in, things like that. As usual, I suspect that the truth lies somewhere in the middle. There is a dispute there. I do truly believe that the CONCACAF's move was a shot across the bow to say, figure this out, or we're going to make your life uncomfortable. Because ultimately, if they deny sanctioning, the Fury can take them to CAS. 100%, and maybe even win, although I suspect they might not, but that's my own opinion, and I'm not a lawyer.
You never know, right? They bring up the single entity aspect and the antitrust aspect, and everything goes into place, and if they say, look, the conspiracy here is Victor Mantigliani maybe putting pressure, so So there's a lot of things that will not look necessarily totally legit to a judge in the Court of Arbitration of Sport, and the ruling could surprise us, even though we might believe that the Canadian Premier League is the best possible option. In reality, a judge, a European judge, might see it differently. We never know.
Yeah, perhaps. Look, I think that this, if that case were to go to the Court of Arbitration of Sport, that it would get worldwide headlines, because there are ramifications not just in North America for that, for a ruling there. If they were to rule that sanctioning could be denied based on borders, then really you're putting a lot of pressure. You're questioning a lot of teams around the world at that point, right? You're forcing things to sort of justify, you know, the decisions are not decisions there. And if they rule the opposite, that borders can't be closed, that's even more impactful to the world's game, because that would then open up UEFA to creating their Super League. You know what I mean? That would then open up CONCACAF to creating a Super League. That would be a decision that I don't think, and I wonder if CONCACAF didn't back down because of FIFA pressure, because they don't want it to get to CAS and have that decision go to the fact that the borders are open, because really that Super League battle comes down to a FIFA UEFA battle. UEFA wants a more continental championships to take place, more people to look to them rather than FIFA as the world's leaders of the game. And the ultimate expression of that would be a European Super League. It would make a lot of money. I mean, a lot of purists would hate it,
but we still
would make so much money. Yeah, we'd watch.
And the other Pandora's box that I believe so too in that decision next year, if it ever goes there, who knows, right? If you're allowed to be sanctioned outside of your borders, outside of your country, who knows? Maybe the LA Galaxy in the future will want to join Liga MX. Who knows, right? And who knows if Tijuana would like to join Major League Soccer? And then there's a lot of ramifications to a decision that could happen. And one of the reasons why this situation is fascinating is because there's a lot of teams in the world that are just on the border of another country. And who knows, with this decision next year, if it does come to it, they will have maybe the opportunity to join the league on the other side of that border or not, depending of their financial situation, of the potential of that league, of the possibility of winning a different or more, I would say, a more glamorous trophy. If you win Liga MX versus Canadian Premier League, at least in the next few years, there's a difference of glory. There's a difference of reach of your success. So we'll see. This decision could have a lot of ramifications across the world of football.
Look, and you talk about the LA Galaxy and me wanting to join Liga MX. I think it's more the opposite, that you might want to see a Tigres looking to gain the American market more thoroughly. And that's why things like Superliga, which we talked about yesterday, are cropping up. Was it yesterday?
Everything it was blends, yesterday. Kevin. Everything blends together, but no, it was yesterday.
Yes, it's, you know, that's why these decisions happen. And I think ultimately, look, I'm ambivalent beyond words. I'm completely torn about what to think of a CONCACAF Super League, because I do think that it would be wonderful to watch. And I think it would launch the club game in this part of the world to the next level, to the point that it might legitimately be able to compete, maybe not with the Premier League in Serie A, but certainly with the Argentine League and with the Brazilian League and things like that. I absolutely think they could get to that level if they join forces. And it makes a lot of sense for the Mexican teams commercially. They're better sportingly. There's no doubt about that. Yeah. And I think we're going to see that again in 3 months, right? So that's no doubt there. But nonetheless, it would be commercially make a lot of sense for them to take their next step and push them next level. Because the one thing, if you look at the Mexican teams, when they get to the world level, when they get to that Club World Cup, for what it's worth, they don't tend to do great in it. They often lose in the quarterfinal stage. So maybe if you have more commercial might, you're getting into the American market, you're really fully maximizing your revenue possibilities, then maybe they can start to reach up and legitimately compete with the South American teams to be that second tier in the world. It's going to be a long time before you're competing with a Real Madrid. You know, you've got a lot of history and money and everything else to compete with there.
If ever. To be serious. It's going to take a long time, if ever. And by the way, I just double-checked. We talked about it on Monday. So if you want to know more about the Superliga and MLS Teams, Liga MX Team, and the possibility, Monday we had Tom Marshall of ESPN on the show, of ESPN Deportes and ESPN FC. And you can go back to the archives of the show 2 days ago on Monday to hear more about the potential Superliga, rebirth. And on that note, we'll wrap the show for today. It was fascinating. Thank you again to Mickey Turner of Soccer ESQ joining us. You can follow him on Twitter at Turner ESQ. And until tomorrow, tomorrow we'll do a Two Solitude Soccer podcast. So there's no soccer today on Thursdays. It's available at patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. $2 a month will give you access to this Canadian soccer only show. 4 times a month, 50 cents a show. It's cheaper than a coffee at Tim's, and it's about 10 times cheaper than a coffee at Starbucks. So make sure you go to patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. Your encouragement, your support, your money helps us continue to work, do the show, be able to get the research, be able to find the guests, get the bandwidth, everything needed to run a podcast. Is done with your support. So we do thank you so much. You can follow this show live every single day at Soccer Today SPN around 11 a.m. in the morning. We are live on our Twitter feed and available at podcasts everywhere else right after. SportsPodcastingNetwork.com as well. Dwayne at 24th Minute, myself at Kev Laramie. And until next time, have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.